to carry or to rest? It's a pretty good question, right? Especially it's the Sabbath. We're supposed to be resting today. But are we carrying some stuff? Probably. So what are we supposed to do on this Sabbath day? It's kind of a controversial day for a day of rest and worship. If you look at different cultures and different religions and different sects within certain religions, with the Christian religion, with the Jewish religion, and so forth, it's kind of a controversial day for such a... It's simple. The Sabbath is supposed to be a day of rest and worship. Us humans are awesome at making things very complicated there, aren't we? So... Here's where it even came from in the first place, is Genesis 2, verse 1. So the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was completed. On the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, because it was the day when he rested from all his work of creation. Pretty simple. You can research and you can find listings and listings on top of listings of prohibitive activities. Many times, if you look at the Jewish culture, where we'd be talking more about the Old Testament, and they're really talking about the Torah and that part, they break it up into 39 categories. So then not only that, but you have this huge list, and then we've categorized it because we like to put everything in our little boxes in our little place, right? Bible verses can be attached to each one of these prohibitions. It can be boiled down to, basically, in my research, you can boil it down to the work necessary to build the tabernacle, which is very interesting, which is pretty broad. So if we look at Exodus chapter 31, and I'm just going to call out a couple of verses so you don't need to go through your Bibles if you want it this time, it's up to you. But 31:12-18 says this. This is the instructions for the Sabbath. The Lord then gave these instructions to Moses. Tell the people of Israel, be careful to keep my Sabbath day, for the Sabbath is a sign of the covenant between me and you from generation to generation. It is given so you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy. You must keep the Sabbath day, for it is a holy day for you. Anyone who desecrates it must be put to death. Anyone who works on that day will be cut off from the community. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day must be a Sabbath day of complete rest, a holy day dedicated to the Lord. Anyone who works on the Sabbath must be put to death. The people of Israel must keep the Sabbath day by observing it from generation to generation. This is a covenant obligation for all time. It is a permanent sign of my covenant with the people of Israel. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, but on the seventh day he stopped working and was refreshed. When the Lord finished speaking with Moses on Mount Sinai, he gave him the two stone tablets inscribed with the terms of the covenant, written by the finger of God. And if we pop over to 35, Exodus 35, 1 through 3, then Moses called together the whole community of Israel and told them, these are the instructions the Lord has commanded you to follow. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day must be a Sabbath day of complete rest, a holy day dedicated to the Lord. Anyone who works on that day must be put to death. You must not even light a fire in the home, in your home, any of the homes on the Sabbath. Pretty clear and pretty deadly circumstances if you do. Get it? Because it's death, deadly, right? So it's pretty strict back then. And then after this, it goes into this whole dissertation about the offerings of the tabernacle, how they're going to build it, what they should do, the craftsmen that they will need, the talents that they will need to build it. And it goes into the specifics of what goes into building a tabernacle. We need people to make curtains, so we're going to need sewing. We're going to need to have specific colors. We're going to need to have specific measurements. We're going to have specific things that are going to be the beams. We're going to have specific materials that are going to make all the ordained, all the ornaments and such. We're going to have specific things for specific purpose to symbolize specific things, and we need specific talents to build all that. So you can get where it comes from there then. All those talents and all that work would be rolled up into these prohibited activities. It pretty much makes sense. So I get where it all comes from, right? And we can get the symbolism of all that. it's very good stuff. Basically, when it came down to it, the symbolism that really comes down to it is everything that we do, everything, like if you talk about the tabernacle, you have to tear stuff, you have to carry stuff, you have to build stuff, you have to paint stuff, you have to dye stuff. They're creating the tabernacle. They're creating the house of God. Who is the ultimate creator? God. He created everything in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested, and he said, this day is holy. And so when I read all this stuff, and some stuff was stricter than other things, and like some people, you can't drive on the Sabbath. Some people, you can't tear on the Sabbath. Really interesting, you can't tear toilet paper in this group because it's tearing. It's work. It's tearing. There's one of the activities is tearing. So it goes from one degree to the next degree and everything in between, right? Like everybody has their interpretations. Everybody has the things that they need to do to feel like they're closer to God. And if tearing your paper on Friday instead of Saturday is what you need to do, then that's what you need to do, right? Seems extreme to some of us, but that's how they had it. Because it symbolizes that when you do that stuff, that you're the creator. But on this day, we need to remember that God's the creator. Was kind of, when you sum up, it doesn't, if you're the strictest of the strict or you're not so strict, it sums up acknowledging God and acknowledging that God is the God and God is the creator of everything. And what they were trying to do is to have one day where you remember that you are not and God is. It's really what it sums down to. That's the worship and that's the rest. Twofold. Worshiping, acknowledging God. And then, I don't know about you, but who's tired in this room? Who gets tired? Who has a to-do list that is just ridiculous? Do I have any taskmasters in the room? Like, you have to have all your tasks written down. Like, you have to, not only do you know you have to do all this stuff, but you write it down so you can physically see that I have 102 things to do today. How many people are reasonable with their lists on what you need to do? Oh, I got one person that's reasonable. Yeah. I like to write the whole big list and then go back to that list. But part of the list is like prioritizing my list. So I write my list and then I go back and I look through it and then I prioritize it and then I get all my sticky notes. This is my work desk. And then I got my sticky notes and I have October 2nd, October 3rd. October 4th, October 5th, October 6th. Then I look at my priority and I say, what's reasonable to get done today? And that goes on October 2nd, 3rd, and so then I get this. And I look at everything that's left over and then I circle it or square it or something and I say, and this will be the next week. And I have it all there. I've got it all planned. My Monday morning, I'm set to go for the week. It's going to be awesome. I'm going to get a lot accomplished. And then guess what happens? 8 o'clock in the morning happens on a Monday, and I open my email after I did all my lists and I figured everything out. And there's you get the email with the exclamation on it. Oh, the exclamation email. And how can there be multiple exclamations in a day? But there are. You got to do all that stuff. Now I've got to redo everything and figure it out. Or I say, I can do this and all that stuff. And then what happens at the end of the day? I'm tired. I'm worn out. And my little October sticky, my poor little October 2nd sticky, I got my little squares so when I get something accomplished, I can put my little check in it. Not one check. Not one check. I have all these squares. And not one check. They're supposed to have checks in it at the end of the day. At the end of the day, I'm supposed to look at that little sticky note. And I'm supposed to be like, I did something today. I wrote the memo. I sent the email. I reviewed that spreadsheet. I have a really awesome job. It's not boring at all. Not one checklist. And guess what happens at the end of the day? I'm bushed. I'm so tired. And I look and see, what did I do? And I look at that sticky note to give me confirmation that I did something. Isn't that silly? And if I have my little check marks, I'm more refreshed at the end of the day on my way on my commute home. If I have no check marks, I'm just done. Even though I did a whole bunch of stuff, because what happened? Life happened and I had to reprioritize it. You could put it in your everyday life too. You have the things that you need to do. Life happens. Something occurs. You've got to stop and move. But you see how our humanness, or maybe just my humanness, maybe this is just for me. You see, we can get so task-oriented. And you're talking about in Moses' times, these people were slaves. They didn't know what not doing something meant. They didn't have the opportunity to sit and to binge on Netflix. They didn't have the opportunity to put their feet up. They constantly had a literal taskmaster telling them that they needed to do this, this, and this, and this. And after their 16-hour day, they had other things to do. Or however long they worked, they still had to go home and feed themselves and do what they needed to do. All to do it all over again. Da, 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 da. So God asks us to rest. Am I the only one that has a hard time doing that? I got one person with me. I got one person with me. It gets difficult sometimes, though. Because what happens? We start thinking about, if I don't do this, then somebody's going to be like, oh, why didn't you do that? And sometimes it's you. And I'm not just talking about tasks. Like, let's make it a little bit deeper. That was kind of fun to talk about, like, things. But what about your emotional tasks you got? What about the spiritual burdens that are sitting down? That's stuff too, right? That's stuff that we need to rest from. We can't carry all that emotion. We can't carry all that sadness. We can't carry all that anger. It's why we're in these seats right now, trying to put it down here right now at the feet of God. That's rest too. Physical, spiritual, emotional. When we look at the acts of creation, they're talking about things like carrying things, tearing things, building things, cooking things, lighting a fire, putting a fire out. Any of the things that I said just now, does any of those say not to help someone? Does any of those say don't show compassion, don't show mercy, don't show love? Do you get where we're going here when we flip over to Luke? I think so. Luke 14 talks about the Sabbath as well. Jesus talks about the Sabbath. Luke 14, verse 1. One Sabbath day, Jesus went to eat dinner in the home of a leader of the Pharisees, and the people were watching him closely. There was a man there whose arms and legs were swollen. Jesus asked the Pharisees and experts in religious law, "Is it permitted in the law to heal people on the Sabbath day or not? Is it permitted on the Sabbath day to heal or not?" Well, what kind of healing is it? Are you going to have to carry something? You're going to have to tear something? Like, do you have to put a Band-Aid? Like, because you have to tear off the little clip things? You have to open it up? What kind of healing? Like, I can imagine what the Pharisees are going, well, okay, they're huddling now. Okay, so swollen legs, swollen arms. I don't think you'd have to carry him or tear something. I don't think we'd need a tourniquet or anything. Is it permitted on the Sabbath to heal or not? So ultimately, this little huddle, they couldn't figure out what 39 prohibitions or whatever the list is, because it varies. They couldn't figure out if this particular healing would or would not, or are we talking about this one, or are we talking about in general? So they just decided, they refused to answer. When they refused to answer, Jesus touched the sick man and healed him and sent him away. Then he turned to them and said, "Which of you doesn't work on the Sabbath? If your son or your cow falls into a pit, don't you rush to get them out?" Again, they could not answer. pretty simple. If someone falls into a pit, do you get them out or do you wait 24 hours? You get them out of the pit, right? Spiritual, physical, emotional. You get them out of the pit. Complicate things. One interesting thing I picked up about this is if you read about the no answer from the Pharisees, is caring is a prohibition on the 30 and when it, on one of the 30. You know what? I can't read my handwriting. Thinking Cindy looked today and she goes, how can you read that? I already went over that. So Jesus is taking us deeper, isn't he? Jesus is taking us deeper, like Jesus tends to do. It tends to be very physical stuff back in the Old Testament. It's spiritual too, but you can. There's physical rules. There's physical things you have to do. Jesus always takes us deeper, and he said, yeah, that's all true, but let's go deeper. Let's go physical to the spiritual. What did it mean to the man that was healed physically? It meant that no longer had swollen legs, no longer had swollen arms, could probably walk a little bit better, could probably do stuff. Like, if you're all swollen, I just kind of pictured the Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters, like, just kind of, or from the Christmas Day, what is that, Christmas movie, where he's, like, in his full outfit, and he can't, he's like I pictured, like, what kind of life is that? Like, oh. Like, physically, it meant what? He could do stuff again. He could walk. He could lift stuff. He could hug people. Maybe he can't get his arms like being all swollen like that. Spiritually, what did it mean to the man? He was seen. He was loved. He was shown mercy. That he was important. That God is the almighty healer. Who knows how long he was bound by that swollenness? And Jesus says something interesting here that caught me. He said, or not Jesus said, but it said here in the scriptures, Jesus touched the sick man and healed him and sent him away. It was kind of interesting. Like, he didn't say, you know, now that you're healed, hang out and have dinner with us. He sent him away. Isn't that kind of weird? Is it contradictory to what I said about being loved and seen and whatever? No, because it's indicating this man was now free. God is saying, you're healed. Go. You are free. Go frolic now that you can walk and run and do all these things where you're not bound up by that swelling. He's indicating you can go. You are freed. When we go to Hebrews 4, Hebrews is always good about telling us the whole story. Hebrews likes to take in the Old Testament and the New Testament and cross it all together and mangle it together and give us a deeper understanding. So we're going to go to Hebrews 4 right now. God's promise of entering his rest still stands. So we ought to tremble with fear that some of you might fail to experience it. For this good news that God has prepared this rest has been announced to us just as it was to them. But it did them no good because they didn't share the faith of those who listened to God. For only we who believe can enter his rest. As for the others, God said, in my anger I took an oath, they will never enter my place of rest. Even though this rest has been ready since he made the world, we know it is ready because of the place in the scriptures where it mentions the seventh day. On the seventh day God rested from all his work. But in the other passage God said, they will never enter my place of rest. So God's rest is there for people to enter, but those who first heard this good news failed to enter because they disobeyed God. So God sent another time for entering his rest, and that time is today. God announced this through David much later in the words already quoted. Today, when you hear his voice, don't harden your hearts. Now, if Joshua had succeeded in giving them this rest, God would not have spoken about another day of rest still to come. So there is a special rest still waiting for the people of God. For all who have entered into God's rest have rested from their labors, just as God did after creating the world. So let us do our best to enter that rest. But if we disobey God as the people of Israel did, we will fall. For the word of God is alive and powerful. It is sharper than the sharpest two-edged sword, cutting between soul and spirit, between joint and marrow. It exposes our innermost thoughts and desires. Nothing in all creation is as hidden from God Everything is naked and exposed before his eyes, and he is the one to whom we are accountable. So then, since we have a great high priest who has entered heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to what we believe. This high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, for he faced all of the same testings we do, yet he did not sin. So let us come boldly to the throne of our gracious God. There we will receive his mercy, and we will find grace to help us when we need it most. This promised rest goes beyond restoration. It goes beyond a really good nap on a Sunday afternoon. God is our sanctuary. This is talking about God being our sanctuary, our place of refuge, our place of safety. We read earlier, or we didn't read it, but one of them is to not carry. Put down your burdens. One of them says, do not tear. Stop tearing yourself and others apart. One of them says, don't put out a fire. Don't put out somebody's fire when they're full of joy and graciousness and love and mercy because you're having a bad day. You could take it all literal. But Jesus is inviting you to go deeper than that today. He's inviting you to go deeper into your rest. Not just the vacation from work. Let it down, people. Put it down. God is inviting you to the true rest. This is why we come to church. This is why we have this sanctuary as a symbolism of coming into God's sanctuary. You physically moved into the sanctuary, did you not? Each one of us had to physically step into that. You also need to spiritually step into that sanctuary, which is God and God alone. Once again, God establishes rules or guidance that is designed to be for our good and is designed to be for his glory. Rest is for whose good? Ours. Worship is for God's glory to be raised up. Ultimately, that's what God wants, right? Everything good for us and acknowledging that God gave it to you. He wants worshiped. God does everything with us in mind. His sweet, tender, beautiful creation, he did everything for us in mind. So take your day of rest from your burdens, your fears, your tasks, your thoughts. Enjoy what is in your life. Enjoy what your life, and the only way to truly do this is to fall into God's presence. The holy tabernacle or the holy sanctuary. Allow God to restore you physically and emotionally and spiritually today. Allow God to be your rest. Come to God with everything. Trust me, when your sticky note isn't marked off, instead of feeling disheartened, you'll feel, well, you know what? I did my best today. And I rearranged and I did life, and God guided me to what really needed to get done. Because guess what? Those 5 or 6 things that were on that sticky note that I talked about at the beginning, they probably didn't need to get done that day. They probably didn't need to get done. So we can run ourselves ragged, or we could understand that God's in control, and what we got done that day is probably what we needed to get done. And as a church, let's enter into God's rest.